Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by uncontrollable flatulence. Instead, it's supported by the generous contributions of people like you, our listeners, on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thinkingsideways to learn more.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't understand.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hey there, and welcome again to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I am Steve, as always, joined by...
Devin!
And Wolf.
Wolf?
Yeah, that's my new name.
Oh!
Turning a new leaf.
I wanted something a little more macho, so I decided to go for Wolf. So you can all call me Wolf.
All right, Wolf.
Okay.
We'll go with that. Arf. Okay, so it's Steve, Devin, and the old Wolf.
Yeah, hi there.
No bark.
No bark. Enough of that. Well, hey, everybody. This week, as always, we have a mystery. This mystery was a listener suggestion. It was suggested by Meredith. So yeah. Thank you, Meredith. I know sent this one in a while back.
I'm going to say Meredith was the first of many.
Yeah.
We probably just didn't record the rest.
No, we
didn't.
Sorry,
guys.
It's the first come, first serve kind of thing.
Sorry.
Really?
But what we're going to talk about this week is The Lost Dutchman's Mine.
The what?
The Lost Dutchman's Mine.
Oh, crap. I misread it. I thought it was the Lost Dutch Boy paint store franchise.
Sounds so similar.
Yeah, well, that's actually a legitimate mystery. They built this franchise, and they wrote the address down on a piece of paper, and then somebody lost it. The piece of paper, that is.
Oh, I thought they lost the little boy.
No.
That's another mystery?
Yeah, okay.
No, we just proved that one.
All right, well, let's focus on this mystery.
Okay, the mine. Okay,
yep.
Not
all right.
The store.
So before we get started with the mystery, I do want to say that there's several Lost Dutchman's Mines across the U.S. So we are specifically talking about the one that is believed to be in the Superstition Mountains in Arizona.
That's the big one.
It is the big one, yeah. But there are others, so I just want to make sure. A brief overview before we get into most of it is the legend of the Lost Dutchman's Mine, which says that there is a gold mine with an amazingly pure vein of gold, and it was found either by the Apaches at some unknown time in history, by the Spanish in the 1500s, or a German immigrant in the 1800s. The mine is believed to be located somewhere in the Superstition Mountains, and it's believed to be in the vicinity of, there's a peak called Weaver's Needle, and that's where everybody thinks it's at. And supposedly the mine is lost, but the funny thing is that it wasn't lost before gold was pulled out of it and brought back to civilization, possibly along with a map. Maybe not. Don't know. Stories vary, and that's something I'll preface this with. There are multiple versions of this story.
There are lots of stories regarding this thing.
That's what makes it so fun.
It is.
Yeah.
It's kind of boring if you just say, I don't know, there was a mine, but we don't really know where it is anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And episode over. Done. Choomf. No. That's not the way it's going to go.
Not quite. So
since the story came out, in whichever time frame it is that it came out, whether it was with the Spanish or with the German miner in the 1800s, people have since been going out into the desert searching for the mine. If they're lucky, they just lose their fortunes. If they're not so lucky, they're losing their lives.
Happens, yeah.
It does. And part of the reason for that is because people go looking for it, and they aren't exactly seasoned prospectors. They didn't know what they were doing, and they weren't prepared. And so you add that in with the weather and the countryside, and it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, especially if you go out by yourself, which some people do.
Which is a lot of people seem to have done.
And anytime you go out in the wilderness by yourself, by the way, you know, you're taking a big chance.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah, it is.
So let's give a little bit of geographic info here just so people know where we're talking about.
Okay.
Superstition Mountains themselves are roughly 50 miles or 80 kilometers east of Phoenix, Arizona. The temperatures in the area swing, this is in the summers, they swing from a low of 80 degrees to a high of 106 degrees, and that is the average in that time frame.
Yeah, in the winter it's like it's also super, really weird.
It's super cold.
Because it's high plains, right?
Yeah, so. And it's desert, and deserts aren't known for being warm in the winters.
No.
Actually, even in the summertime, the desert gets pretty damn cold at night.
I was thinking,
are you talking 80 degrees at night?
Yes, that's the low.
I'm sure. I would think it'd get a lot lower than that. Even
it can, but this is this is the high. So this is say mid peak July.
Oh, okay.
August, there's not so much a temperature swing at that point.
Oh, okay. So these are highs of 80 to 106, not the lows. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
So the other reason, as we said, it's a desert. It only gets a couple. I think 8 inches of rain a year. So it's not as if you're just going to find pools of water laying around to fill your canteen up with.
No burbling springs. No.
Nope. None of that. So the whole place is, it's rock, it's scrub, it's valleys and bluffs, and it's just not the place that anybody should be going wandering into unprepared and most definitely not on their own.
I
recommend you get a guide if you're going to go.
Or like five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With guns. But do they have rattlers up there?
The ones that little babies have or the snake?
Yeah, the snake.
Yeah.
They do.
They have snakes. And probably some other creepy crawlies that I don't
want
to
think
about.
Yeah, kind of like Australia.
Not as bad. Nothing's as bad as Australia. In Australia, everything wants to kill you.
Arizona is the Australia of America. Let's be fair.
That's probably... Yeah, that is true. But
I don't know about that. But I'm sure there's some other places that'll take umbrage at that. So I'll let them email us.
Okay.
Ha!
If you're the most poisonous state in America, we want to hear from you.
New Jersey. Oh, wait. That's the wrong kind of poison.
Wrong.
Okay. So there's a misnomer in our story that I want to clear up real quick also before we get into it, and that is the name of the mine. We here in the U.S., we're super culturally sensitive, especially in the 1800s, and so that's where this comes from, is the mine was found by a man who was called the Dutchman, but he wasn't Dutch, he was German, so Deutsch. So being as, like I said, sensitive as we are, Deutsch, Dutch,
close
potato,
enough.
Potato, they're the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's why it's called that. So as I said before, there are multiple versions of this story, and there are multiple variants of each version. So what I've decided to do here is kind of what I've done in the past. I've packed each one up into as much of a story as I can without veering down every little side alley here. So if you're familiar with the story and this doesn't meet up exactly with what you've heard, well, that's because it's a variant. So initially, this is the earliest version of the story of the Lost Dutchman's Mine. It comes from the Apaches, the Indians, American Indians who lived in the area. And they, of course, were there before Spanish or Europeans showed up. The story that they tell is about a sacred cave that houses the spirits that protect the mountain. The entrance to the cave, according to their legend, is protected by a pair of rattlesnakes. One is male and one is female. Between those snakes are two cups, and I believe it's shell cups, if I remember right. To enter the cave, though, you need to walk up to the cups and have a blue stone and a white stone, and you need to put those into the cups, or in some other versions, they're a blue and a white feather, but you're going to put them into the cups. It is going to be that the female will get the white stone and the male will get the blue stone. And when you do that, that will prompt the snakes to leave the entrance of the cave and you can enter it.
Mm-hmm, okay. Now,
what's really interesting is when I was listening to, or when I was reading this, and then I watched In Search Of, the old Leonard Nimoy show,
yeah,
which was a lot of fun. I didn't realize he hosted that show. It just completely evaporated from my head.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy was telling the story, and then I was like, okay, so this is just kind of is allegory, is that the right word to say?
Allegory, yeah.
I think it's allegory.
Is it allegory?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was thinking, oh, it's just an allegory, whatever, whatever.
Yeah, you know, a story with a hidden meaning.
Right. And then I started reading on some boards about this, and people are saying that they were interpreting this to mean that the entrance of the cave was protected or covered by two actual rattlesnake stone statues, and that the stone, the blue and the white stone, would act as a key to open it, which doesn't mate up at all with what we know of what the tribes of the American Indians did, but it was an interesting idea to me.
Was this on Web Sleuths?
No.
Are you sure?
Absolutely sure this wasn't on Web Sleuths. This was on some miner's board.
Mm.
But you know,
Dutch board.
There's these two statues that are closed together.
Very Indiana Jones-esque.
Yeah, and then you put the stones in and give them a twist, and they slide apart.
You got it.
That's silly.
I think that's a little bit beyond Apache technology, to tell you the truth.
Well, maybe it was alien technology.
Maybe.
Yeah. I love the idea.
I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think it's right.
No,
but
cool.
Yeah, I think, yeah, no.
All right. Well, let me finish up just with this bit of the story, then.
Okay.
Then we'll keep going. I know you don't think that's right, and that's fine. I just thought it was fun.
Good. Okay, fair.
I got the feeling from what I read and listened to about the story from the Apache that the cave is not so much, you know, this gold-filled thing, but instead was a place to go to commune with the spirits of the Suspicion Mountains. You know, I think it was a thunder god I heard it referred to in one place, so I don't know, but it seems like it's more of a spiritual place for them, not a gold thing.
That would make sense. I mean, it's my understanding that historically Native American peoples have had more of like a reverence for the space that they're in than the sort of, wow, that's gold. Let's take it.
Well, yeah, they didn't really have. Yeah, I'm sure they would have loved to have had the gold if they had been valuable in their economy, but it really wasn't.
But it wasn't, yeah. And it would make sense that you might look at that and think, yeah,
great.
That's a special place
that
I'm going to talk to somebody important in, but
the value is not what's in the walls. The value is in the space itself based on your
belief
culture.
System, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's go on from here. We have we have two versions of this story that revolve around the Spanish.
Of course.
According to this version of the story, about 1540, a Spanish conquistador named Francisco Vasquez de Coronado, he came to the area, and he was looking for the seven golden cities of Cibola. And the Spanish met the Apache, and they told him about the Suspicion Mountains, and he immediately interpreted their stories to mean that one of the golden cities of Cibola was there, and his men immediately went to search the area. They never found it, but while they were in the area, they kept mysteriously losing men. And that's the way you'll see it described, is men would just evaporate or disappear. And I don't know if really they were deserting or if they were falling off cliffs. I have no idea.
Probably deserting. But although it's always possible the Apaches were kidnapping them and murdering them, too.
Yeah, that's absolutely possible. So I don't know. That's where the Spanish, the actual 1540 version of the story ends, and it disappears from there. But it dovetails quite nicely in with the second part of our story here, the last telling of the story, which is probably the most fleshed out because I think it's the most popular, pushing us into the 1840s. There's a man named Don Miguel Peralta, and he's the member of a prominent family, and he goes out looking for the gold that De Coronado couldn't find in the 300 years earlier. Mm-hmm. He, by the way, remember that name.
Well, I watched The Wire, so yeah.
Wrong. Not that person.
Not that Peralta.
No, Peralta, though. In this story, his name is peppered all over the place.
Okay.
So the story goes that Don Miguel Peralta went out searching for the gold in the Suspicion Mountains, and he indeed found it, and he returned to the site that he had found the gold with a whole host of workers and began to mine it. Being that he was digging in sacred territory, the Apache were none too keen with that. Mm-hmm. And he figured, well, it's probably time to pack up and get out of here. But being unwilling to just leave his gold mine open for any old schmo to just wander in and start working, he somehow covers the entrance of the mine. And I don't know how he does that.
Probably dynamite.
Yeah,
maybe.
I was going to say blowing it up is a pretty good way.
Yeah, but it makes it hard to go back and start working. That's why I don't know how he did it, but that doesn't really pay too much into this. Because what happens is that he loads his pack animals with gold and his equipment and his men, and then they go to leave, but he probably shouldn't have spent so much time, packing up his stuff and blowing up the entrance to the mine, because the Apaches show up and they kill every last man. The pack animals, however, are not killed, and they are loaded with gold, and they run away. And supposedly for about 50 to 80 years, people wandering in the area would find the corpses of these pack animals with satchels of gold attached to them.
That'd so they were above ground finds.
Yeah. Uh-huh. My one issue with it is that I don't exactly know how anybody knows that that's what happened to him and the men. Because
since nobody survived.
They had to be survived. Or there's other people who said they found a whole host of corpses several miles out away from Weaver's Needle. So that must have been the indication that the Apaches had got them.
I guess I don't know why you have such a problem with this, because what we're saying is a group of Apache Indians came and killed a bunch of dudes who were messing with their sacred site and survived that attack and left. And I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that they might have bragged to some people about it. And that's how we got this story, was that they said, yeah, that guy that was digging in there, we killed them all, because that's what happens to people who mess with our.
You're saying the Apache were spreading the story that they had. Okay. I just making sure I understood who when you said that guy.
Yeah. So for me, it's like there are a bunch of people who left that scene alive. And it wouldn't be so crazy to me to say, especially if they were trying to discourage. Thank you. Discourage people from going out there and searching for it anymore. They would say, yeah, you know what happened to the last guy who did that? We killed him and all of his men.
Everybody, yeah.
We killed them all.
And there is an addition to this story, which I initially hadn't included, which is that there was a doctor who was friendly to the Apache and helped them. And so what they did one day was they said, we're going to pay you back, and we know what you find valuable. Mm-hmm. Can't say the word valuable all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. But they blindfold him, put him on a horse, take him somewhere, and he picks up as much gold as he can off the ground from there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe there is. That's how it spread from there. I don't know. Yeah. I always question when it's and every man was killed.
Yeah,
but we know the story.
Yeah, but again, it's like not everyone was killed, right?
True.
Just all of the workers who were digging the mines were killed. And there were a bunch of people who did the killing.
And actually, the workers were probably slated to get killed anyway, because they knew where the mine was.
Possible.
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, that's the one thing I was going to say, is that story about the guys who were found away from Weaver's Needle that people said must have been the killing ground. Mm-hmm. That's actually, I believe, it's called Massacre Grounds. It's actually a known site. So you can find it on the map, and I was all over Google Earth looking at this stuff.
A lot of dead bodies there?
No. I got to be honest with you. On Google Earth, this whole place is really not that fun to look at.
Shocking.
It's brown, a little bit of scrubby green, and valleys and ravines. It's really.
But it's a known site, as in a known place where there
was gold.
It's a known
historical site where bodies were found, yes.
Where bodies were found, not...
There's accounts that say that some gold was collected at that site, but I didn't dig too deep in to see if that was historically true or not. This was one of those things. It's in that slide of so many bits of the story that you can only run down so many.
Okay.
So lastly, let's move on to our most popular version of the story, which is the Dutchman himself.
Yeah.
Yep. I like this one.
Yep. So our friend the Dutchman was an actual guy. We historically know who he is. His name was... I'm going to say it's Jacob Waltz, but it could be Jacob. I'm not sure which it's going to be, but I'm just going to refer to him as Waltz because that's safe.
Yep.
He was born in Germany in the early 1800s. He came to the Americas, or came to the U.S. in 1845, and he made his way in kind of this zigzaggy route south from New York. He went through North Carolina, and then he, you know, came across towards Texas, always chasing gold. He was always looking for the next place, because you got to remember, there was a lot of boom towns at this time in history, and people were mining things all over.
And they died out pretty quick.
They did. They would die out super fast. So he was chasing that all the time. And he eventually ended up in Arizona around Phoenix, and he ended up living out his years in that area.
Okay.
He was working his own mines there. And I know we all have that mountain man miner idea in your head where the guy's up in the hills, in a hole in the hills, and then he comes out once in a great while to go to town and get his supplies, and that's all you ever see them. And while it's true that he would spend time at his own mines, he couldn't make a living doing that because he never had any kind of profitable claims. So he would go do work for other people. He would work in town. I mean, it was not uncommon to do that. A lot of these prospectors had to do that to be able to feed themselves.
Yeah, there wasn't actually, you know, all that many rich mines to be had out there,
unfortunately. Big strikes aren't, still to this day, aren't very common.
Yeah. I think of it as like a Deadwood sort of situation. Do you guys ever watch
Deadwood? Yeah,
And how the prospectors were more for hire than anything else. And
sometimes,
it would be,
you
would go work for the rich people who came into town thinking that their claim that they had just bought was going to be worth a lot of money, and... You know, that's kind of what I picture prospecting really like, not, you know, down in the mines, pulling gold out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Two ways to look at it. But yeah, that's exactly right. They didn't do it full time.
Yeah.
So we reach a little bit of a split in our story here with Mr. Waltz. From here, there are variants of the story that he... So he met a fellow German by the name of Jacob Weiser, who had been in the area as well. And there's some versions of the story, like I said, though, that have him. There's versions that don't. So we're just going to kind of run on maybe he did, maybe he didn't exist. But they showed up in the Phoenix area in 1870 and suddenly had a bunch of gold and drank on it for days before they packed up and headed back out into the mountains. And according to the legend of the story, Weiser did this for 20 years. He would show up with gold and, you know, live high on the hog for a while, and then he'd head back out in the hills. And there are variations that say how he found the gold. So this is some of the difficulty with the story. Some people say that he accidentally stumbled onto one of those piles of gold that was attached to a dead pack animal.
That would be reasonable.
And easy.
Mm-hmm.
There are others that say that he and his partner killed two Mexican miners who they took to be Apache. And then after they'd killed them, realized they were mining the area and then realized they had a valuable mine. Or there are the versions that say that these two were given a map by a Mexican Don whose life they saved. And let's flesh that out just a little bit. The Mexican Don, because
who
it turns out
that been?
It turns out it was a man who was Don Miguel Peralta.
Peralta.
That guy again.
Again.
Huh.
And he was, according to this, he's a descendant of the man who had found the mine the first time. And the Dutchman saved him from certain death in a knife fight. Certain death. And as a reward, he let him look at a map he had of the mine, and then eventually he took him and if his partner, Weiser, existed out there, and supposedly they started working it, and eventually he was bought out, And then after a while, suddenly the partner stops showing up and people can't decide if he just died of natural causes, if the Apache killed him, or if Weiss killed him.
You mean Waltz?
Waltz. Yeah. Weiss. I don't know who Waltz.
It's hard. They're both Jacob.
They're very similar names. Yeah. Very Waltz, similar names, yeah. Or if Waltz had killed him. So he kind of disappears at that point. Waltz himself dies in 1891, but not before he meets a woman named Julia Thomas. And it's really funny when you read the accountings of her. I've heard that she was a rather young woman. I have heard that she was a rather old widow. It goes back and forth what she did. But apparently he befriended her, and maybe they had some kind of romantic relationship. And he kept dropping hints about where his mind was and telling her that he would take her to it, to see it in the spring.
Then he died.
Unfortunately, he died in, I believe it was October. Yeah, it was October of 1891.
Was Julia Thomas perhaps a very young, beautiful girl who had found a guy who was promising, an older guy who was promising her a lot of stuff?
Possibly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She is possibly that.
Okay.
She could also be a woman of, mature woman, so not a 20-year-old girl, but a 40 or 50, because she's always described as a widow.
Mm.
So she could have been the widow of a minor of a man at 20, or she could be the widow of a man in her 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You'd never know. And her age is never specified anywhere. When they collected his body to take it away, they found underneath his bed a sack of gold with very pure gold in it.
Great.
So everybody is excited to say that he got it from the lost Dutchman's mine.
Of course.
And, we've got to go get that. And then, of course, since then, people have been going out into the hills and digging holes like they're gophers and just riddling the area with pockmarks. So that's kind of where our story ends. There is one thing about this that I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about, and that is the Peralta Stones.
Of course.
Again, the Peraltas pop up in our story. In the early 1950s, three stones, I guess technically four stones, three rectangular stones were discovered in Apache Junction, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And along with them, there was a heart-shaped stone that was found. The rectangular stones are made of sandstone, and they're called the Peralta Stones. And then the heart stone is called the Latin Heart.
And we're talking things that had been made to be that shape by men, right?
They are man-made.
Yeah.
Yes. So somebody did carve them somehow.
Right.
Yeah, and they're like bricks. They're about, 8 by 14 inches, something like that?
I thought they were more akin to 11 by 17, but somewhere in that range, yeah. I mean, I've always seen pictures of them, but I never got good dimensions on
them. No banana for scale.
No banana for scale.
Damn it. Did it again.
So on one face, one of the stones is carved on both sides. And on one face of that, that's referred to as the priest map. And it shows an etching of a person wearing a pointed hat standing on a rectangle, which I believe is supposed to be a block. And it's got 1847 etched into that block. And they're swinging across the shape of a cross down. And underneath that, there's a rectangle with a cross in it and a heart, almost like they're falling away from the cross.
Mm.
Then to the right of that, there are several lines of text in Spanish. On the opposite side of the stone is what is called the horse map. And that also has more Spanish on it, along with the engraving of, not surprisingly, a horse. And then there's some squiggly lines and some numbers on it. You take the other two stones, which these stones get stacked on top of one another, so it appears to only be carved on one face of each. And they have on their face, again, this is a series of squiggly lines and some numbers. And there is in one of them a depression that has been carved in that is in the shape of a heart. And by the way, when I say the shape of a heart, I mean, like the European Valentine heart shape. Exactly. That's exactly it. The lines that are on the stone run up to the edge of the heart, the part of it that's carved out. And if you take the Latin heart and put it into this spot, they mate up perfectly, and those lines continue across the Latin heart. So people interpret this to mean that these stones are a map, that they are reflective of certain geographic features in the area. And so they're trying, you see people always trying to mate these up to different maps, which depending on how you zoom in or out, you can put it into a thousand places.
So one of them definitely looks to me to have maybe some like constellation drawings on it maybe, or something like that as well.
So you're probably referring to, it looks like a series of dots with lines connecting it?
No, that's what I would interpret as a trail, a path, right? But then there's the squiggly, like one that looks kind of like a W and one that looks maybe like an X.
So you're interpreting them as constellations. I got it. Okay.
Or, I mean, mountains, because one of them definitely looks like mountains and then there's a bunch in the sky that look like constellations to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's totally up to interpretation, though. So.
It absolutely is. I mean, everybody, okay, not everybody. A lot of people are convinced that it is a map that's meant to lead you to the Lost Dutchman's Mine. I find it strange that it showed up in the 1950s, but hey, what do I know? Oh, wait, I do know something, because it turns out that most of the authorities on engraving from the 1800s and stoneworking have looked at these things and said they're fakes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Because the faces of the stones where the etching is, they're rather smooth, and to have done that in the 1800s, you have to rub two stones together for quite a while with water between them, mm-hmm. to wear them down. Doesn't appear to be that way. The lines and the shapes that are cut into them appear to have been cut with a modern power tool, and then somebody took some other implement to them to try to rough them up and make it look real.
Antique them a little bit.
Antiquing, yeah, that's exactly it.
That wouldn't surprise me.
For a lot of experts on that kind of work, they don't pass muster.
They also don't, I mean, they don't look, for as old as they're supposed to be, those fine lines have held up remarkably well in the arid wasteland of the middle of the desert. So, mm-hmm.
You know what the other problems are?
Oh, tell me, all of them.
Okay, so the Valentine's heart, that it's a European thing. Mm-hmm. That didn't show up in Latin cultures until the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So couldn't be in era. And the Spanish's poorly assembled sentences that are also using modern words and phrases. So
of course,
there's a lot of things that call this out as not being truly period.
Yeah. The map supposedly that's on them is just kind of like crude and meaningless.
It's hard to say. I've actually watched previews. There's a TV show, apparently, a reality show of a bunch of guys hiking around in that area using a map similar to this to try to locate the mine. And it is just so funny to watch them do it and overlay it on this and overlay it on that. Like, you can put that on whatever you want. Mm-hmm. If you zoom in and out, you'll eventually make it fit something.
Something.
So,
yep, pretty much.
Yeah. Theory time?
Theories, yeah.
Yeah.
I love theories.
Shall we go down the rabbit hole here?
Yeah.
And ha!
We'll start off. Let's start off with the whole thing is a fake. Because that's one of this. There's two very basic theories here.
Yeah.
It's fake or it's real. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's start off with it's fake. Not long before Walt showed up in Phoenix in 1870 or so with all of that gold that he was spending around town. Remember I said that he had been working other claims and things like that to make ends meet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that he had been working at a mine known as Vulture Mine, which was actually a super productive mine. It ran from 1863 to 1942, so 80 years.
Yeah.
Well, he was fired, apparently, for stealing.
What?
So it is very possible that he simply stole some gold from the Vulture Mine,
mm-hmm.
went out in the superstitions, and then came in and said he'd totally found it.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
is totally a plausible thing.
Great way to launder your money.
It's a good way to launder your money. It's also a really good way to build trust to open a line of credit, say. If you come rolling into town with a bunch of really pure gold and you spend it all,
but you mm-hmm. say
but you've said that
more
it's
of it.
From that one that thing, you know, it's out there. There's a mine out there. It's super productive. You've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go out in a couple days. I just need, you know, a couple more drinks, one more night in the hotel, and then I'm good. I mean, I know that's not attached to the story necessarily, but...
Yeah, no, that stuff did happen, and maybe he did it several times, came back several times, mm-hmm. and that's how he built up that kind of stress. I mean, yeah, it could be. I don't know.
He could have hit a bunch and, you know, kept him back out.
Actually, in those days, you probably didn't want to walk around with your entire fortune in your pockets.
No. No. Yeah. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
You're aiming to get shot.
These days, even, too.
Yeah. But, you know, stealing a bunch, getting fired for that, and then needing to build up a name for yourself somewhere else, it's not unreasonable to think this is a good way to curry trust from people. They'll think that I have a lot of money. They think I have a productive claim. And then when I run out of this money, they'll trust me.
Yeah.
So I can just ride that for a while.
You know, do what I got to do. And maybe he intended to skip town, but he had enough.
Probably.
And he just stretched it out. I don't know. Let's go and quickly talk about his dear lady friend, Julia Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah, and Julia took care of him in his later years, right?
According to versions of the story, yes. Yeah. At least in the last year.
Do we know how he died? Was it old age?
I believe he just died of old age. Okay. It wasn't as if he died of a mysterious knife wound to the back.
Right, but I didn't know if it was he had an injury or an illness or something.
As far as I can tell, he was in his 70s.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, he'd been working out in the mountains his entire life. So, she, though, Julia Thomas, she might actually be the reason that we know this story and that it's so popular. And that's because after Walt died, she and two other men went out into the Suspicion Mountains looking for the mine. And after they couldn't find it, they came back and she started selling maps to the mine. So now she's making money by saying, this is a map based on what he told me or gave me. Which is suspicious.
It's almost a gold mine in and of itself.
It is. It's kind of cool. Nice, well played there. In 1892, she spoke with a writer named Pierpont C. Bicknell.
Oh, God.
Yep.
I love that name. Pierpont C. Bicknell. Yeah.
And he wrote several stories over the years about this. And not surprisingly, the details changed from edition to edition. He was writing his articles, at least the one that we're going to cite, came from the San Francisco Chronicle, which actually had a pretty decent circulation for the time.
Yeah. And but there's no internet. You can't search the archive very easily.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the only way to go.
So it's easy, right? It's easy to just print a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah. You can just do what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take an excerpt from an article that he wrote, and it was in the January 13, 1895 edition of the San Francisco Chronicle. Joe, can you do your best 1890s newsman voice for us?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. I'm going to do a gruff mountain man voice here.
Well, that's not very newsy.
Mine lies within an imaginary circle whose diameter is not more than 5 miles.
I don't think that's going to work.
You don't think that's going to work? All right. Let me start over again here.
Okay.
Okay, let's just do it this way. Just a flat Midwestern accent. The mine lies within an imaginary circle whose diameter is not more than 5 miles and whose center is marked by the Weaver's Needle, which is about 2,500 feet higher, among a confusion of lesser peaks and mountain masses of basaltic rock. The first gorge on the south side from the west end of the range, they found a monumental...
Yeah, the sentence structure is a little weird, I know.
Yeah. We're missing a verb there. They found a monumental trail which led them northward past Sombrero Butte into a long canyon. Travel northward in the gorge and up over a lofty ridge, hence downward past the needle into a canyon running north, and finally into a tributary canyon, very steep and rocky, and densely wooded with a continuous thicket of scrub oak. Reads like a legal description, actually.
Yeah, so it's not exactly... And where he got all these details is really, really confusing to me. The only thing that I can guess, and I know a lot of people think, is that he gave an interview to Julia, or Julia Thomas gave an interview to him, I should say, and then he ran with it and he added things. He changed the name of Weaver's Needle to, like it says in here, I think Sombrero Butte. He used to call it Sombrero Peak. Like the names always kind of got shuffled about.
Well, that's journalism for you.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing about about this description and of course the map that Julia Thomas says was selling is that Waltz did drop some hints. Apparently he was known for dropping some hints about where the mine was, but nothing anywhere seems to lend me to believe that it was as such a detailed description as this. There were people who tried to follow him. It's according to the legend, he would go out and people say, I'm going to follow him. I'm going to knock him over his head when I find his mine. I'm going to take his claim. Except that he would always shake who was ever following him. So I sometimes wonder if that is true, that bit about him shaking people, maybe people, Bicknell talked to people who gave bits and pieces that then Bicknell assembled along with the stuff that he got from Julia Thomas. I don't know. I mean, that's a complete guess on my part as to where this fantastic word problem of a description comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's move on to the other thing that makes me think that possibly this whole thing is a fake, and that is the Peraltas.
Yeah.
Once again, we're going to talk about those folks.
Those guys keep popping up in this thing.
They did. The first mention of them comes from documents that were filed in 1882. And that documentation was from a scam that was made up by a man named James Revis.
And because supposedly the Peraltas were actually in the area for a long, long time before that, right?
According to the lineage that Revis made... Yes, the name Peralta is a very common name, so it is very possible that there were people with that name in the area, but it seems that the lineage that is assigned to this may have actually been taken from this scam that that he was doing, because he was trying to do it in a land grab bid.
He claimed to be related to the family, and
he claimed that he was working with the family, or they had given him this, and there was some land claim deed stuff going on. He pulled this at least one other time, and he would double down on it, and then he'd get caught, and he'd go to jail, and he'd start a different scam. But then from there, the name didn't show up again until the Bicknell article. So it may be that Bicknell heard, oh, well, there was the Peraltas. Well, let's go ahead and pull that into the story. And maybe that's where the seed of that part came from.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, so this part of the story, and there's variants on that, I believe. One is that the Peraltas had a mine or two.
Mm-hmm.
Or another one is that they just had a buttload of gold that they hid up in the Superstitions Mountain.
There was also that they were rich cattle ranchers.
Yeah.
There was also that,
yeah.
that controlled a huge swath of the area. Although I think the cattle rancher one is from the Revis scam.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. The last thing that I have for this theory is that, you know, people have been scouring the Superstition Mountains, and especially in the area around Weaver's Needle, for over 100 years. And nothing's been found.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has found a thing. And if indeed the thing is truly there, the chances of anybody finding it, well, they're amazingly fantastic, and they're very low. And I say they're very low because the area has been closed to mining. It was closed in 1984 under the Wilderness Act of 1964, which said you can't go in and do this stuff. Prospecting today is allowed, and that is wander around, pick up rocks off of the ground, and then take them home and figure out what they are. No digging. If you want to dig, that is considered mining, and you've got to get a permit to mine. You can also do what is called treasure trove hunting, which is you go along and you try to find some kind of treasure that's just sitting around. But you've also got to get a permit for that. So it's the act is set up with a real catch-22. You can't show a find unless you dig for it. But you can't dig for it to have a claim to show. And if you dig for it and you suddenly show up with this claim, they're going to put you in irons and lock you away for digging unprotected land.
I love a bureaucracy. Yeah, I know. I know, as I knew, I used to work with somebody, and her husband was a scuba diver, and he and a friend discovered this treasure trove of cars at the bottom of the Willamette River.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, back before they closed the ramp by the Selwood Bridge, people would just, like, shove their cars into the river and report them stolen.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to salvage these cars, and the state was like, well, you can't salvage those cars unless you have title to them. And they're going like, well, how are we going to get title unless we pull them out of the water? Well, we don't care. Eventually, they worked it out. But, yeah, it took them a while.
Yeah, I'm sure you had
that bureaucratic mindset. Mm-hmm.
And I don't even want to know how they had to go about that. But, yeah, awesome. Okie doke. Let's go on to theory section number two, which is it's real. You like how they put a little bit of feeling behind that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I... Yeah.
Are you giving me a C minus on my acting skills?
Yeah. I am. No, I was more going to say to the point of nobody's found it. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's kind of like, well, okay, you can't mine, right? So even if there was this mine. And also, what's to say that it wasn't just totally mined dry?
That's actually very mm-hmm. possible.
You know, that would account for nobody having found it, but...
Well, and people have said they found it. So yeah. If we're going to start in... This isn't something that I've got on what you guys are looking at, but there is a guy who in the late 70s, I believe it was, maybe it was the 60s.
1970s?
Yes.
Okay.
said he, I believe it was that age, mm-hmm. he said he had met some men who had known the Dutchman, and they had told him what the Dutchman had told them, and he went out, and he found the Dutchman's mine, but it wasn't around Weaver's Needle. It was in another area in a valley up a hill, up a mountain, and it was a pit mine, and he pulled out, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 worth of gold at the time, mm-hmm. and the thing ran dry.
Yeah.
So it is possible that somebody else found it, not knowing it was the Dutchman's mine.
Yeah.
You're
totally.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So
sorry.
No, that's fine, because this is right along the lines of the fact that yes, lots of people have been finding gold in and around the Phoenix area. I mean, we talked about the Vulture Mine. Mm-hmm. Almost 100 years in operation, for God's sakes.
Although I've heard, too, though, that geological surveys of the Superstition Mountains indicate there isn't likely to be any gold there.
Well, that's I've heard that. I've also heard people say, well, you've got to find the vein. There are precious metals. I mean, there's a huge copper mine right just to the east of the Superstitions that is being mined. Mm. So there is stuff in the ground. I mean, I don't know. And is it the mercury vapor test? Is that what you're talking about? Is that the one you're referring to that was saying that there wasn't probably a lot of gold in the area?
I don't know. I just read they did a survey. I'm not sure exactly how they determined if it was just geological. It's like, this is the kind of rock where you're just not, you know, it's like igneous rock, volcanic in origin. My understanding is that gold veins come from things like meteor impacts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so, but a lot of the volcanic activity in the West is actually pretty recent in geological terms. And so there probably are some rich gold veins, but they're buried underneath a huge slab of lava.
And true.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I mean, again, there were gold fields found. I mean, there's a place called Goldfield. Mm-hmm. There was not too far away from where people think the Lost Dutchman's mine is. There was the Black Queen mines, which were super productive mines for a while. So, I mean, there is gold. There is gold in the area. Getting to it and finding it is the problem. And, you know, then that's part of the reason that, like, the Wildlife Act of 1964 was used to close the area. Because mm-hmm. you know how people used to go prospecting?
Dynamite. Oh.
Dynamite.
You just blow stuff up until something sparkles.
So it looked like the whole area started looking like the surface of the moon.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons they did it, because people were just going crazy. Because they could. Because it was, who cares? It's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, but people did find gold. I mean, it did get found.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean that the Lost Dutchman's mine is real? I don't know.
Hard to say.
I mentioned just briefly a second ago I used the term pit mine. I, at least in my head, always had this idea that the Dutchman's mine must be your typical mine that is just a hole cut in the side of a mountain and it burrows straight down and slowly slopes down. But there's our mines where guys just dig straight down. It's literally just a pit in the ground.
You just dig a hole.
You dig a hole and you put timbers around it so it doesn't collapse on you, and eventually you stop getting anything out of it, and then you just walk away and nature fills it in. So that's why we talk about it could have been mined out, mm-hmm. or maybe he mined it out, mm-hmm. and it just over time filled in. We don't know.
I don't know how often they fill in. They fill in with dead bodies because people keep
falling into
them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, the landscape in the area has changed in the last 100 years, not just because of bozos out there with dynamite, but there have been earthquakes. I think there have been a half dozen strong earthquakes in the last 100 years, enough that...
That'll collapse your mine shaft.
Collapse a mine shaft, cause rock slides. So it could be that the pit was filled in with material, or the entrance collapsed, or it was covered in a rock slide. I mean, this is, these are things that very easily could have happened. And so that's why we don't see anything. You know, everybody's like, oh, well, that's obviously just a bunch of stuff that's sloughed off. It can't be behind that. You just keep going.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a total guess. I do want to say as a public service announcement here that if you do decide to go out and mine for the Lost Dutchman on your own, you want to go dutching, because that's what it's called.
Give me your car keys first. I'll look after them.
I want you. You need to get a guide. You need to take the right provisions, because it is very easy to get lost and to suffer great injury, if not die. If you really want to do this, you can actually join the Lost Dutchman's Mining Association, and for a small fee of just under $5,000, they'll let you go to their site, which is right near where they say the Lost Dutchman's mine is, and you can dig for gold there.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a better way to invest your money.
I agree.
Smart. And $5,000 one-time fee, or $5,000
Oh, that's
a
if
year?
You pay all up at once. They've got payment plans.
Oh, okay.
You could spread it out as long as you want. You don't get the discounts if you don't pay up front.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, for me, one of the things is... It's all circled around the needle, right?
Weaver's needle.
It's Weaver's needle. It's all Weaver's needle. But I've been hiking before.
You have been?
I have.
What's it like?
It's cool. Yeah. And we live near the Cascades, so you go in the Cascades, and you can tell the difference between that's the mountain,
mm-hmm.
and this is all of the other littler mountains, mm-hmm. cones, things around it. But I don't know that I could necessarily, and granted I'm a layman, right? But I can't necessarily, when I'm standing next to a thing, say, oh, this is the tallest peak in this area, versus that's the tallest peak in this area, versus that thing that's 20 miles away is the tallest peak in this area. So I don't know how much room for error there is on saying, yeah, it was the biggest thing around. Cause
well, Weaver's Needle is very distinct.
Okay.
It is a very distinct, it almost looks like an obelisk.
And it has been?
Yeah.
And that's throughout all of the earthquakes and stuff,
and you know, it might just be one of those things. That's like the guy who's looking under the street light for his car keys, even though he didn't drop them there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like that. Weaver's Needle is such a distinctive landmark that how could you leave it out of your story? You know,
right.
it's great. Wow, this is this fabulous landmark that's easy to find. Everybody mm-hmm. knows what it is.
Very recognizable.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah. So not surprising. I guess. But that sort of leads me towards the fake part of things, I guess. Okay. Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Although for me, if I'm trying to hide a mine and people are really pushing me for info. And
give
saying,
them a little bit of disinformation.
Yeah, especially if this is the sort of situation where I've got a mine and I just want a line of credit for a couple drinks. And they're like, okay, Joe, I'll pour you another drink if you give me like one hint as to where your mine is. Mm-hmm. And you say, it's near Weaver's Needle.
Yeah.
And they'll go, oh, okay, yeah, I know where that is. Okay, cool. Here's your thing.
Here's your whiskey.
Yeah, versus saying, you know that fourth biggest peak on the east side?
Yeah, there's that.
It's there. It's that area. That's not what you're going to say.
Right.
You might know in your brain that's where it is, but... I think, especially if you're trying to sell maps like Julia Thompson,
yeah,
you're just going to say it's there.
Yeah.
I think it exists.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I would like to think it does, but I also have a feeling that if it did, it's been cleaned out long ago, and it's just, it's a story.
Possibly.
As always, it's the story is snowballed, and the mine is now in tellings much greater than it ever was in actuality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Way I think there's time. Definitely a nugget of truth here.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, last thing I was going to tell you guys is I really found interesting is there was a book called Earthcore that I listened to several years ago. And it had, when I was listening to it, all these features that were described and about these guys who are mining and yada, yada. And as I was researching the Lost Dutchman's mine, I realized I was like, wow. A lot of this sounds like the terrain around Weaver's Needle. It makes me wonder if this is what was the foundation of the story or the inspiration for it. Story is set somewhere else, but it was just really interesting. It's like, oh, I'm going to have to go pick up Earthcore again. Damn it.
Earthcore, huh?
And find out if that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of tending to think that if I found a great vein of gold and I'm going into town and people are asking me about it, I would send them totally in the wrong direction. So there might be a lost mine or a great vein of gold, but it's probably not in the superstitions at all.
Well, that's the same. It's right along the same thing as what Devin was saying. Yeah, you might walk out towards Weaver's Needle knowing that you can easily ditch the guys that are following you, mm-hmm. and then hang a right and start heading east to your real site.
Yeah, which is not even in the mountains at
all. Which is not even there. Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. It's, I'm thinking that probably it might have been a rich vein somewhere, but not in the Superstition Mountains.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, like I said, there are mines right in that area, right around where everybody thinks it. And I think that's part of why the legend is so solid and built in, is just because there was actual productive mines.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a cool legend. I mean, yeah. I've enjoyed reading about this one since I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's been around a long time.
It has. And I think we've probably sunk enough time into this one. So let's go ahead. Devin started it. Let's go ahead. So we should probably go ahead and give everybody their favorite bit of information.
Because I know nuggets of information.
Yeah, she already used that one. You gotta come up with something better. You're mining for something now. Oh. That was just as bad. Well, we have a website. If you want to go see that website, it is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. We'll have some links for research on this episode, along with all of our other episodes, so you can listen to and download from there. I know a lot of people are using iTunes, so if you're on iTunes, subscribe. Do take the time to leave a rating and a review, because that's what helps other folks find us. We're on pretty much every streaming service that's out there. I know that people are using Stitcher. I also know that we hear a lot from Google Play. A lot of people are finding us on there. So whatever service you're using, we're on there. And if it allows you to rate and review, please do so on that as well. We're on social media, so we have multiple accounts. We are on Facebook, where we have a Facebook page and a Facebook group. So you have to join the group, but there's always good stuff and fun discussions going on in there. We are on Twitter. We are Thinking Sideways without the G in the middle, because there's that character limit thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just like what you can tweet, the names are abbreviated as well.
Precisely.
Devin sends out weird stuff and confuses people, and it's quite entertaining.
I keep making jokes, and nobody's getting them anymore. So.
Yeah, they're falling flat.
I'll set up a fake account, and I'll pretend to get them.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
We are also on Reddit, so we have a subreddit, which is Thinking Sideways, and there, I've been noticing a lot more stuff coming through Reddit lately. So
there is more. It's picking up a little bit.
Yeah, it's taking some time. If you want to go ahead and get a hold of us, you can do so through our email account. So if you have a question, you have a concern, you want to share a story, you just want to chat, you send us that email at thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. Do be aware, we get a lot of emails, so these days we're typically a little bit behind, but we're still working. We're still trying to get to everybody as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, this is awesome, and I'd like to help you out. Well, there's a couple of different ways you can support the show. We sell merchandise. We have shirts and mugs and other stuff that I can't even think of what it is at the moment. Stickers, that's the other word I couldn't think of.
Nightlights.
I lost stickers. They are both available. All those things are available through Zazzle and Redbubble. You can find those on the right-hand panel of our website, the links to those two, to directly to our pages. We have an account with PayPal. If you want to do a one-time donation, you're more than welcome to do that, and we appreciate that. If you'd like to do it on a recurring basis, then that's where you're going to go to Patreon. Patreon.com/thinkingsideways, where you can pledge a certain amount per episode. So every time an episode drops, then what you have pledged would be the amount that would come out and go to us. And we appreciate that just as much as people who are buying merchandise and people who are using the PayPal.
That's awesome.
Helps us out, and it is very awesome, and thank you.
Oh, and if you prefer to sort of stay off the radar, if you're like a drug kingpin, whatever, just send us an email. We'll give you our P.O. box. You can send us an envelope full of cash or maybe a kilo of cocaine, whatever. We appreciate all contributions. We really do. So send us that email.
For anybody who is listening, disregard what Joe said, except for the part of sending us cash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The drugs, not so much.
Okay, fine.
Okay. We are going to go ahead and wrap this one up and call it a night. So thanks a lot, everybody. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Toodaloo.
I was waiting for a better pun.
Sorry, I don't have one.
I got nothing.
Used them all up.
Mind out, tapped out.
Pretty much.
Hit the bottom. Yeah. Nothing more in there.
Really run this vein dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had nothing, like I said.
Kept digging.
Next week.